This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. Today is Tuesday, June the 17th of 2025, and we're going to hang out today and talk a little bit about what's going on inside of the world, but we're also going to do a flashback, because why would we not do that? We're going to go back to the event that happened in Banff, Canada, or Banff, Alberta, Canada, better saying, that occurred under Energy Safety Canada's conference. And today we're going to listen to the keynote that was performed by Brett Sutton and Jeff Lith. Yeah, you know, Brett Sutton's here on Safety FM. He hangs out, does some podcasts and all that kind of fun stuff on our network. And Jeff Lith is a friend of the show. He runs safetydifferently.com. Yeah, he's been on here a few times. But today during their keynote, they're going to talk about how to learn how the 4Ds work. That's dumb, dangerous, difficult, and different, and addresses the challenges in everyday operations and how organizations use human and organizational performance principle to bridge the gap between work as imagined and work as done, and discover how AI-powered tools scale operational learning, allowing organizations to anticipate emerging risk and create better work for people. We also explore the AI dilemma of ensuring trust, accountability, fairness, and AI-driven systems while balancing technology and innovation and human error. Now, after the presentation, we have a brief conversation with Jeff and Brent at the back end, so you're not going to want to go too far away. So take a listen now to their presentation from Energy Safety Canada's conference that they had back in Banff.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all three books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Morning, everybody. Good news, bad news. I think the good news is that, remember Sean yesterday when he was talking about priming? And he said, overnight, the priming is lost. Remember that? That's a good news, because that's a tough act to follow. So if he primed you all in any way as such a gifted storyteller, I'm glad it's been a night. Bad news, I was told there would be mimosas. I don't know. That's kind of what got me out of bed this morning, to be honest. There we go. So I'm going to say a few words this morning, a bit of background on the 4Ds and what got us here, and then I'm going to introduce Brent to come up and say a few words. But we want to talk, give a bit of background on the 4Ds, but we really want to talk today about scaling that learning. There's been a lot of conversation this week about operational learning and sort of tapping into that. And when organizations start on this journey, they end up with an awful lot of information to manage. And so that's what we really want to focus on today. 3 years ago, we stood on this stage and spoke about the 4Ds for the first time. And such an amazing 3 years it's been, a time of great change and rapid evolution. At the time, we took a play on the AI thing and we emphasized actual intelligence, right? We were beginning to talk about AI and we said, look, what we really want to focus on is actual intelligence, the tacit knowledge of our people, and tapping into that. So it was a bit of a play on the term AI. We were talking about it at the time, and I was really comfortable with that because I was very uncomfortable with AI at the time. I was a doubter. I'm thinking, oh God, people are going to go crazy with this, and it's going to take us in the wrong direction. And I got to say, as a neo-Luddite, is what Brent calls me, he's always talking me through IT things. If I can install these agents in my 365 environment, anybody can. If I can use them to great effect and coach them, anybody can. So I'm going to give a bit of background, and then we're going to, Brent's going to talk about that. I'll introduce Brent. The year after that, we wrote a book. We created these cards by client demand. Client asked for these cards. So then we put them on our website, and they've gone out all over the world, these cards. And we estimate the organizations that have ordered them and started these conversations are probably touching about 3 million workers that year. It was amazing how it spread so quickly. We're very proud of that. What we saw is the industries and the sectors this was going to. Fascinating, just fascinating. Of particular interest, these last couple, banking and insurance and education. I was not surprised by it going out to all forms of general industry, heavy industry, but it was really interesting to see the uptake in these sorts of industries. And it really made the point that when you ask these questions, we're engaging our experts, we're consulting with them and finding out what makes their work difficult and the rub points in their work. And it's equally as effective for, you know, more office-y working folks, not just heavy industry, not just physical working folks. And what the emphasis there, I think, was that these organizations, by talking to their people, were tapping more efficiencies and eliminating waste, but there was also the tapping into the psychosocial risk, which Brent is going to touch on, and how having these conversations and analyzing the stories that come from these conversations really helps us move into understanding that psychosocial piece that's tough for many and tough to get your head around for many. So it's been an amazing journey over the last couple of years. It's just going crazy. So many organizations now are learning about work. They're learning about their risks. It's just fantastic. The complexity, what they can see, the complexity. We've talked about work as being not merely complicated but complex. And I think having these simple conversations really unveils for folks the nature of that complexity, that work isn't linear, it's messy and changing, risk is always present. And that really helps them be comfortable with complexity, tapping into complexity in a simple way and demystifying it and really becoming understanding of what their people are going through. Appreciating that variability is not the enemy, that the people make systems work. It's not the perfect design of systems or those awesome SOPs that are giving us the success that we get. It's really the humans out there that are able to perform their functions, their knowledge, and adapt and change. And we want to think it's our systems that are so perfect, and it's the people that vary from the systems to create problems, but it's really people generating all of our success. So we're really helping organizations learn and improve. It's been a really fantastic journey. But I don't want to take too much time. We really need time to talk about these tools that help us learn at scale. Each of these conversations is really powerful individually, but when you're having thousands of these conversations, that's a lot of information to manage. And luckily, we've got some tools, and luckily, I've got a partner who's quite adept at this. So just to back up or background the 4Ds, I want to show you this video. I think some of you haven't seen it, but we want to give this example of the 4Ds in action and just give you a sense of, if you haven't seen it, what these conversations look like.
4 years ago, I transferred from another department into this department. I was hearing every day just little issues from the crew. I'd go out and check in on a job, see how they were doing, and they would tell you that everything's good. And then as I would leave, I would listen on the radio to the work throughout the day and the different work that's going on, and I would hear issues, and I would hear problems coming up. a lot of frustrations, a lot of tension points that they had to work through, and just systemic problems that they were facing that they didn't know how to solve. That's where the 4Ds came into play. I was thinking about bringing them in the room and sitting down and just having a conversation and open it up so that they can tell me like all the problems that they're having every day. It's a tool in my toolbox that I use to facilitate a conversation. So I use dumb, dangerous, difficult, and different to pull out the weak signals or pressure points on the crews. So I decided to bring this forward to Kathy, to bring the crew in to sit down to have a 4Ds conversation. Kathy immediately said, they've been together for 10 years working together. You're going to unleash the hounds. Good luck. So despite the fact that Kathy had some hesitations, she gave me the green light and said, go ahead. She said, I trust you. Let me know how it goes. So in the morning, I write down the 4Ds on the board, and that's pretty much all I do to prep. So I decided to kick off the meeting to explain to them that I've been hearing some issues in the field. I want to work with them. I want to see if I can help them out. It was total silence in the room. It was very awkward, very uncomfortable. One guy was like, Taylor, we have done this before. Why do you think you're going to do anything different? So I said, guys, like, what's dumb? Tell me something that's dumb that you deal with at work. There must be something. Finally, I had one guy that was courageous enough to say, okay, you want to know something that's dumb, Taylor? Every day is a struggle for me to get a pickup truck. And I just wrote down pickup truck. Under dumb, pickup truck. I was like, great, tell me more. Then the floodgates unleashed. Then they started to tell me other problems. But the pickup truck one was one that I thought was really interesting, that I had a feeling that I could really deal with quickly. So the meeting went really well. As I was doing my crossover with Michael, we're just cross shifts of each other. So I talked to him about it.
When he told me, I was just really excited. And some of the things I really liked was the language that's used in the 4Ds and how that, like, you can make that apply to a field worker. It's just a nice language that they use every day in the field.
Once Mike had finished his 4Ds conversation, we compared the list, and right away it popped out to me that he had pickup trucks on his list as well.
Basically what they were saying is, like, we don't have enough pickup trucks to just go to work. The pipe crew, they do a little bit more complex jobs that require a little more oversight and stuff like that. So we spend a little extra time with them going over the work that they're going to do. And the scramble is kind of like getting out to your pickup truck in the morning, trying to find one that's good or has all the tools that they need for the day.
The keys are in them, it's ready to go, and then each crew member gets to come out and take whichever truck they feel they need for their job. We believe that we're giving them the tools, the resources that they need to go to work. So work is imagined. Work as done. They don't actually have a truck. And it's something that nobody was actually looking at the time, when we weren't even fully aware of.
One of the things we don't typically focus on is psychosocial risk, which really talks to the crew's morale. And that was one of the things that was most impacted by this. So our crews were feeling disengaged and unsupported, and really this was just eroding the trust that they had in us. They would go and like take the keys out of the truck and put it in their pocket before they came into the morning meetings.
People would take trucks that had somebody else's PPE, so now that's going out in one location. Somebody got to go track that down.
They'd take tools out of the trucks that were, you know, other people's other work groups.
You also have guys sitting down and they're rushing through their paperwork as their truck is driving away. They're doing all of these things just so they can get to the job site. Michael and I sat down and we held a 4Ds meeting together to further break down the issues within the scramble.
What was dumb was the workers were being frustrated by the fact that we were essentially setting them up for failure. They were being punished, not rewarded, for the pre-job planning that we were asking them to do.
What was difficult is it's challenging for them to do proper pre-work planning. It's challenging when they don't have a pickup truck. And it's really difficult when you don't have the proper tools in your truck.
What was dangerous actually wasn't anything at that time. When they're doing their pre-job plan and we're talking to them and et cetera, we're holding them and they're building that frustration internally so they don't go out with that clear head and a clear focus.
What was different every day was different. There's no consistency. They never know if they're going to have the right tools. They never know if there's going to be a truck. Every day was a challenge to them. All of this information that we had gathered from boots on the ground, from the folks that are doing the work, here is what we're bringing forward now to our general foreman. Here's what we're going to be working on, turn into for the next couple of years. Let's start with pickup trucks. Now that Michael and I have all of this information put together, we went and brought it forward to Kathy. She was somewhat overwhelmed, but excited at the same time.
They were kind of blown away and saw the value in it. So it was a very easy sell for us.
They wanted two pickup trucks, 1-ton flat decks. That way they can throw all their tools in the back. On site, we own all of our pickup trucks. So that's the issue. It's the budgeting and where the budget comes from. That's the struggle. But by going up to Kathy's manager, we could lease two trucks. And those can be done within a couple weeks. Immediately, the manager said, absolutely, I'll lease two trucks for you right now. So the next rotation now, we came into work and we had two brand new flat deck pickup trucks sitting out in the field. Immediately, everybody knew that was their trucks now. They got their tools, they set it up properly. They were pretty excited to have their own vehicle.
Doing that for the team really helped them understand the process that we were using with the 4Ds and what we wanted to achieve. And it did build that credibility with them and started to build that trust with them to bring forth more issues through that process so that we could try to solve them.
So the measurable gains that we had as a result of the 4Ds was time on tools. We gained an extra 30 minutes where they're not sitting around in a parking lot.
And then ultimately, people wanting to be at work. It's like, I enjoy going there because I know in the morning I'm going to be set up for success and I can actually just go to work.
When you put out the 4Ds, people get it. They understand it. I find we're using it more and more and more. It's something that we're doing a lot of listening and they're the ones that's doing the talking and bringing forward real issues. I would say we're in a constant state of a learning environment. Looking back on it, I did not realize that one conversation was going to have such an impact on everyone the way it has, which is a pretty great feeling.
What do you think? Michael and Taylor have done such amazing work. Funny about that, it's kind of a good example that well-intended organizations think they know everything about the detail of work in the field, and there's always lessons to be learned. Interestingly, I've had this conversation and shown that video back in Vancouver with some longshore terminals, waterfront terminals. Same issue. The guys were watching that, just shocked. Same issue. Those organizations didn't know either. There is so much out there that we can learn by having these conversations. But again, learning at scale. What do you do with all this information? So I'm going to ask Brent to come up and join me here. I was a safety guy for 20 years before finding this different kind of safety in 2012. What you need to know about Brent was that back in the early 80s and through the 90s, he was there instrumental in the work of the personal computers boom. And so this is such an amazing time to vector not just traditional safety and not just this new operational learning and new view safety, but we're dovetailing in now these AI tools, these technical tools. And so it's kind of a combination of actual intelligence, managing actual intelligence at scale, using artificial intelligence. So ladies and gentlemen, Brent Sutton.
Thanks, Jeff. So that makes me incredibly old. Is that right? Yeah, so old that I recall the first advert that IBM put out for the PC, and the poster featured Charlie Chaplin. Google it. Oh, you think now, go, oh my God. You know, because that's how far we've come. Okay, that he was still considered to be this character that we had. And during that time, I've been sort of in what you might think is the safety world since 2001. And even though I've always had that desire around information technology, we never had that potential to scale how we can scale today. And just think about what we could do today versus what we can do next year. And that's the thing that really encourages me. And it's okay to feel uncertain. Okay? But AI is not going to replace us. AI is going to support us. In this case, what we want to talk about are the other things that we found. And particularly with the 4Ds, and once again, it's the courageous work of people like Taylor and Michael. It's the courageous of people like Imperial Oil being vulnerable. And it's the courageous elements of organisations like Energy Safety Canada wanting to share the learnings across the industry is so powerful, because it's the storytelling that creates change. Before someone came up with a risk matrix, who's fans of the risk matrix, 5x5? Who loves a good colour, a good number, a good label? Before we had the risk matrix, we only had storytelling. Humans, through generations, described both the opportunities and the threats and risk through stories. I really question how much we lost by stopping storytelling and moving to a matrix. I don't know how the matrix creates safety. Systems should be there to support safety. It is humans that form safety. And it's what humans say and how they say it is what forms that safety. So for me, storytelling has always been powerful. And I come from a country where we are very proud of our First Nations and Indigenous people. And they have always focused heavily on storytelling. And Jeff and I, we've done some exciting work with lots of First Nation groups around the world. And it should come as no surprise that they all feel a natural alignment to HOP. Okay? It should be no surprise, because all First Nations and Indigenous people, they value self-determination. And for me, I've always questioned my entire life that we spend a lot of time doing safety to people. We spend a lot of time doing safety for people, but we spend little time doing safety with people. And it's doing it with people is what is that driver of self-determination, not predetermination in that space. So what did we learn? We also learned through this entire process that not everything is fixable. And this is hard for leaders, is it right? There is a link between knowing and finding and fixing. Leaders believe that once they know about something, that they must fix it. Many of these risks that we deal with, many of these complex risks, many of these psychosocial risks, by their nature, will never be fixable. All of you have stickies in your business, is that right? Stuff that can kill you? Everyone has a sticky. Do you ever see your organisation never having a sticky? Is it possible not to have? Well, there is, you stop work, is that right? Yeah. So the fact is, many of these risks will never be fixable. And what we discovered on this journey is it's the small changes that create sustainability. It's the small things that help move that dial. It's the small things that help us to continue finding those opportunities to change and to grow. And what we love about those small things is that they don't typically create knock-on effect or unforeseen risks because they're small. And guess who is the best group of people that can tell us what those small changes are? Does it begin with a W? The worker. Absolutely. And the solution, and the words of Todd always says, workers are the solution, they are not the problem. The solution can always be found by deeply understanding the problem in that space. What we also found is that these improvements that were coming from these amazing conversations were not just about safety. In actual fact, many of those conversations were about reducing waste, things that frustrated people in their job. Do you think that there's a connection between waste and operations, frustration, and forcing a worker to adapt? 100%. Okay? Now, the old language would have been shortcuts. Is that right? Yeah. Well, that infers the worker knowingly took a shortcut. But if you get frustrated, and I see this at home, my daughter gets frustrated with me all the time. Okay? That's when we set people up to fail. And we also found that the 4Ds was not just about driving safety, but it was about driving good operations. And shockingly, good operations equates to good safety. Surprisingly, good operation equates to quality. And once again, that's nothing to do with us. That work was pioneered for decades by Edward Demmings. And none of this stuff is new. And what we found was that the sharing of the stories, the sharing of these learnings, identified broader and deeper systemic drivers across the organization. So taking what was learnt locally, sharing that story across the organization and up, other people found similar systemic drivers. And remembering, we're only learning why work is going well. We're not learning from when it's going wrong. So how often do we investigate when it's gone wrong? And then a period of time later, something similar happens. Okay, and we see the same thing. So imagine doing that when work is going well. And what we'd like to say to you is that you don't have to be bad to get better. This whole journey is to basically say we can always get better because perfection doesn't exist. If there's any perfect people in the room, let me know, okay? And what we also discovered was the relationship between hazardous energy. We also discovered that there was this relationship to the design of work. And we also understood that there was this relationship with the workers in terms of their capability and their capacity. And when I say capability, it's about their knowledge, their understanding, all those good things. As Jeff mentioned, a lot of that sits as what we call tacit knowledge. You know, I'm really concerned that as the older generation leaves and the new people come in, that there is a massive loss of that tacit information. And that information isn't stored in a system. And I think the words you use, green on green, that we've got, you know, green people training green people. And if we know our systems are brittle now, just imagine what they're going to be like once that changes. So I'm deeply concerned about this. And we believe that those three things all work together, that they have these relationships, and those relationships are always coming and going. They're pulling. And we've had some great speakers that have talked about the energy, hazardous energy. We've had some great speakers talk about capability, capacity. Well, we're here today to talk to you about designer work. Okay? Because operational learning is about how do we improve work? How do we get rid of all those rubs, all those frustrations? How do we do that? And how do we do that at scale? Because that's the scary part. Right. 2023, 2024, 3 million workers. This year, 10 million workers that we know of. How's that for growth? Okay? That we know of. So just imagine all these organizations who are dabbling, because I'd say 10 million workers is they're dabbling. Okay, they're not scaling at this point, they are dabbling. And there's lots of great learning happening local, but how do we scale that? How do we make that happen everywhere with that? And as Michael and Taylor talked about, the fact is, yes, the floodgates do open. Okay, there's going to be a whole lot of information that's going to come out. Okay, and it's understandable that leaders can be fearful. They call it Pandora's box. Okay, You're opening Pandora's box. Well, we never created it. The box was always there. And sadly, when it goes wrong, the regulator goes and opens the box. Okay, so wouldn't you like to know about the box before it goes wrong? So, here we go. We believe that AI is a critical enabler to help us scale in that space. Not to solve it. AI's job is not to solve anything. It is there to help enable us in doing that. So let me give you some examples. Frontline workers doing a 4Ls and a 4Ds conversation. For those that haven't encountered the 4Ls, think of it like a little mini learning retrospective, where we're looking at a task or an activity and we're asking people, what do you like about it? Because despite what you believe, workers do like some things that they do, okay? They might think that things like, job has assessments are a complete pain, it's okay, but I can tell you there'll be some parts of it that they do like, because the stuff that they like is what they value. The things that they don't like either add no value for them to be successful every day, or they are waste. So we always start with, what do they like? The lack component, that's the 4Ds. What's the stuff that rubs you? Then the third part of the 4Ls is what do you long for? That's the aspirational. So if you believe, if you understand the work, if you understand what you like, if you understand what the rubs are, then you would love to share with us what you think would make a difference. And that's that whole aspirational component. And would it come as a surprise that workers would have different views of what they long for? Absolutely. And the last part of it is, what did we learn? And more importantly, what can we share? So, a bunch of workers doing a 4Ls, and with them is a little device. And I'm going to introduce you to a sample of these devices, which we don't sell. The stuff's on Amazon, okay? But in my hand is something, and here's my Kiwi accent, called Plaud. Hence, I put the words up on the screen, okay? Plaud, a little AI note taker. Sound good? Plaud's entire job is to listen. Okay, Plaud isn't judgy, okay? Plaud just listens, okay? And Plaud is listening to the conversation. Right, so here's Plaud. And here's the outcome of Plaud. So one of our co-pilot agents running on your device has listened to that entire conversation. It doesn't care how unstructured the conversation is, okay? People can be going left, right, up, down. It doesn't care. Its job is to listen to all those conversations and provide you with some structure. And here's the output from Plaud. Here is Plaud giving us the 4Ls and breaking down the 4Ds. Here is Plaud breaking down what we learnt. Here is Plaud breaking down what people like. Here is the story of that conversation, all done for you in minutes. Gets even better. Now we can export that. Now we can upload that to your lovely SharePoint server. Who has to use SharePoint in Microsoft? Yeah, okay. So now you get to put that stuff into this thing. Okay, it's really interesting. Everyone has a safety management system, is that right? We all have software. How much of your data sits outside your safety management software? Probably a lot more than what you think. Okay. So we want to get that data up into that environment to try and make sense of it. How's the sale pitch going so far? Sounding good? Right, you ready? Right, device cost, $220 on Amazon. The cost of the co-pilot agent, nada, zip, zero. So for non-commercial use, free. Learning value, priceless. Sounds like one of those old ads, doesn't it? And you should be cynical when you say, why have they done this? Why have they done this? Because we want you to start on your journey. We don't want to create barriers for you to start your journey. My colleague Brent Robinson rang me yesterday morning, terribly excited. He was in Perth, horrible time zone. He just landed back, 1 a.m. in the morning, his time, breakfast time me. And he said, look, so excited. We're doing a deployment with this company with about 11,000 workers, and we're doing a session with the CEO and all the senior leaders. And we asked the leaders to go with us out in the factory and to run one of their gimbal walks. They do this, you know, monthly safety walks, the thing that the KPI, okay? And they went out and they found pallets, you know, in lanes. They found, you know, all the normal things. So then we asked them to do a 4Ds. And my colleague had the plaud with him. And the CEO basically did the 4Ds, just spent 5-10 minutes talking to a bunch of workers, and he said, I've learned more in the last 5-10 minutes than the last 5 years. And then we showed him the output. Now, he was terribly excited, and he said, right, we're ordering 200 of these right now, okay? And every leader is going to have a plaud. So sadly, he's just weaponized this, and there's a new KPI, okay, which is the number of plauds. But that's okay. We can't change that, because what's going to happen is that as they go on their journey, they're going to learn more, and they're going to become more curious. And I think that is the vital thing, becoming more curious. Because leaders have a strong psychological need for certainty. And as part of that need, we want them to become curious because we're having to feed it. Yeah, we talk all the time, how leaders respond matters, absolutely. When any event happens, that need for certainty is always going to kick in. We can't change that. So how do we scale that? So now imagine we've got hundreds of these things happening. Doesn't matter what the device is, okay? You can do it on your iPhone, you can do anything you like. So you've got all these things happening constantly. How do you make sense of it? So once you see some different agents that look at this. So the first one is that we produce some things called autonomous agents. So what does that mean? Autonomous means that this content that is being put into your SharePoint server, that these agents are constantly going out there and listening. And they're listening for change. And they're looking at what they're receiving, and they're making sense of it. And they're sense making, and they're giving you insights on the go. And those agents can tell you how things are changing, what is emerging, what are the patterns that are emerging, what are some of the, as James Reason would have said, what are some of the latent conditions that keep repeating? It's about providing insights to that. And the other types of agents are agents that are task-based. So these are agents that you use in your Microsoft environment. And we'll talk about some of them. The one that people love, and we're going to give you a couple of free agents today on the QR code for you to try out. One of them looks at the design of work. So upload your job descriptions. Upload your safe operating procedures. And the agent will give you some great insights around those. The agent will tell you performance modes. The agent will tell you where you're setting workers up, where they're having to problem solve. The agent will look and will say, hey, if you're asking them to problem solve, I can see nothing in here that aids people to problem solve. So if we don't support them in problem solving, what are they going to do? They're going to make it up or rely on what they've always done. Okay, so these agents are there just to provide insights. They'll tell you things like, hey, you're making this really complex. They'll tell you things like, hey, you know, if you've got workers, English as a second language, they're going to become disconnected in the first 10 words. Okay, they'll tell you things like, they'll tell you about flowcharts. they'll tell you no one can follow a flowchart. They'll say there's nothing in here that's going to support people in doing that. Some other types of agents that we have, investigation fairness. Once again, we don't blame people, but how often do you see investigation reports where if the worker had tried harder, if they had only shown more attention, if they had only made a better choice, is that quite common? Yeah. So these agents look at those investigations. They give you insights. They will show you how to reword your language to a just culture and a fair model. Sound good? About fairness. Not fair as in blaming, but as in fairness. But they will not write your investigation for you. Our agents will not write your safe operating procedures. Okay? Not their job. Okay? They're there to support you on that journey. One of our clients puts all their safety comms through that agent. Okay? Because what they realized was that when we write things, as humans, we have these hidden biases. Not knowingly. We don't write things knowingly to blame, but it was a hidden bias. So they put all their safety comms. And in fact, now they're putting all their comms through it because they see the value in using that as an assurance tool. Make sense? Not to develop, to provide that assurance. Other things we're doing, critical control efficacy. That's a big word, isn't it? Sean Brady used it. Sounded good because he's got a Australian/Irish accent or Irish/Australian accent. Okay? One of the two. We have to call him Mick Dundee, not Crocodile Dundee. And control efficacy is not about the presence of a control. Control efficacy is the ability of the control, whether it's doable, relatable, achievable. Sound good? And to find out, does that control support or hinder work? Would you believe that controls can hinder work? Yep. Okay, so that's what we call about that. And then system fidelity. Is the system understandable? Is it reachable? Can people access it when they need it? Is it relatable? And more importantly, does it support the changing conditions in work? And once again, what these agents do is we take all your system components, we take a whole lot of conversations from workers about doing that work, and it looks at those two things together. And it shows you the disconnects that exist. That in actual fact, over here, you believe that workers need to apply this rule, but in actual fact, in everyday work, there's a whole lot of other things, or sadly, many of you discover that your rules can't work. And that sadly has caused a lot of angst with people, because these golden rules or these cardinal rules that we have become noble causes. Okay? Because people are either having to change the rules, not use the rules, or make new rules up. So, here's another way of looking at it. All this data, we're now visualizing it. So we've got thousands of stories in here, and we're now visualizing that data. And you can see there's a bit of an outlier at about 5 o'clock. And the first thing you notice, that outlier is in red. Red means that all the stories about that latent condition are negative sentiment. Meaning that the workers have been using some very salty language. Sound good? Workers would never use that language, would they? No. So it's detected because it's listening to what they're saying, it's listening to how they say it, and it's detecting that emotional sentiment. And then we can drill in. And we can see those stories that sit behind it to make people more curious about why this thing starts to come up. Okay? But now we'll show you an agent that is looking across all of that. And this agent is basically summarizing 3 months worth of narratives that have come from workers. And I say narrative, I mean what they said. I don't mean summaries. I mean what they actually said. And just have a quick look. So the tone across the four entries, 8% positive, 15% neutral, and 80% negative. Is that a latent condition? Is that a weak signal? Is that a precursor to a potential event? Then we'll present that to you using these categories. So once again, it's not all about bad news, because there's some other reasons why things aren't going wrong. So what are people like? We shared that. What do they think it lacked? We're sharing that information as well. So it's looking at all those stories, and it's just, you know, summarizing all that nicely. What they longed for and what they learnt. Okay? At this stage, nothing radical here. Would you like to see how it's done a psychosocial risk profile? So 3 months worth of stories, and it's now presented you with some psychosocial risk insights. So looking at these four categories, and these four categories are the categories that are defined by ISO. They're also similar to the categories that are defined in the Canadian standards around psychosocial risk, and they're the same categories that are defined by many regulators around the world who are now regulating psychosocial risks. But have a look. First of all, what supports people? So we need to celebrate that people are finding things that is supporting them from a psychosocial point of view. But then we want to explore with you what is hindering the people. And because workers are sharing with us those stories, we're able to identify what the workers believe are those protective strategies that would help them. Sound good? Is this good so far? No one's asked how long did it take the agent to produce that. Any idea?
5 minutes.
That's a lifetime. Yeah, about 30 seconds for it to produce that. And then this is what we learnt. Sound good? Here are the learnings. So that's what it learnt over that 3 month period. The bottom one, adaptive leadership and proactive work design are necessary to reduce harm and enable thriving. Interesting. And these slides will be made available to you. So does this change how we learn? What's your thoughts? Will this change how we learn? 100%. And what we're hoping is that we're shifting from learning from the past, where organizations will respond, that we're putting more focus in about learning about the present, where organizations want that ability to monitor, that we're moving into this paradigm that many of the speakers have spoken about, which is learning for the future. And that is the ability for the organization to anticipate. You can't predict the future, okay? But we know today is what influences the future. So that notion of being able to protect, to anticipate, becomes really important. And we believe that AI is an example of a tool that can deal with massive amounts of information and help us give insights to that. It won't predict it. But organizations need to balance the value of learning against the organization's uncertainty of AI. I get the same questions every time about AI. I'm still waiting for a new question, okay? And it's perfectly fine. It's all about uncertainty. We won't be having the conversation a year from now. So what we talk about is you need to evaluate a set of principles, use a principles-based approach to AI. And for those that do HOP, you like this? This is the AI version of HOP. AI, like humans, makes mistakes. Sound good? I don't understand why people tell me that it's okay for humans to be imperfect, but they want AI to be perfect. I struggle to understand it because humans created it. Therefore, if humans can make stories up, then why can't AI? Okay, so we have to be conscious of it, and there are things that we can do to manage that. Blame fixes nothing. Don't blame AI. Help it learn. Okay, sound good? People liking this? The AI principles based on Hop. Context and knowledge drives AI behavior. You give AI good knowledge, it will give you good outputs. All the stuff that we're showing you today does not go out to the web. All things that we do are all based on our bodies of knowledge. So it's using, you know, the bodies of knowledge and the science for the AI to come out with the outputs. It's not going out the internet. How you respond to AI mistakes matters. I think Jeff mentioned the amount of energy is used when people say please and thank you with AI. Okay? But in actual fact, it likes being thanked. It likes being praised as well. So how you respond to it really matters. It creates that learning path. And the last one is learning is essential for AI to improve. The more you can feed it, the more it can learn. So I'll leave the QR code up. You can scan it, register, get some free things. Question time. Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a few minutes and tons of questions. We got tons of questions. What data security is present? Can the data provide to Plaid and Hop Copilot be encrypted so data is more secure and can't be exploited?
Sure, so two things. Hop Copilot runs on your Microsoft Copilot environment. Sound good? If you've got poor security on your Microsoft environment, you can have that problem. In terms of Plaid, yes, so once again, it has different layers of security. It's used in healthcare, but the device I was showing you today, basically everything is stored on my phone. None of the files are uploaded to the cloud. Sound good? It's all sitting on my device. And in actual fact, when I finished a conversation with a bunch of workers, I delete the recording because all I want is the output, you know, the raw narrative and the output. I never keep the recording. So all these things can be captured. It's no different. You can capture recordings on your iPhone right now. Okay? I think security is going to be the same.
Connor McDavid scores another question. Does Hop Copilot intend to utilize or summarize user data to make broader assumptions or even monetize this user information?
So once again, the body of knowledge is purely based around Hop and the science component. So it can only take assumption. Well, the body of knowledge is the assumption that it works on. It's not going out to the web. Does the AI show its thinking? No. You can't ask AI to show you the back end. It won't happen. This is neat. Why use Hop Copilot? This is there any reason our own Copilot reviews? Hell yeah, that's the whole idea. We want you to develop your own things. Okay? We have always stood for creating sustainable practice. But what we're doing is we're showing you how to start. We want you to do small experiments. We want you to learn. We want you to see the value in learning. And then you build that within your own environment.
I think there's a lot of questions about privacy, trust. So I think the second and third questions are kind of similar. A worker's response when every word is being captured creates many issues, privacy, trust, bias, work culture. What do you do about this? And then another one talking about the confidentiality of the data.
Yeah, so once again, none of the recordings are kept. We're only keeping the narrative and the output. It has no way of knowing who the person is. And even if they say a name, the output removes any identifiable information about an individual, but more importantly is the output also removes any harmful language. We want workers to tell us how they see it. We want them to use, you know, tell us the, because that's where AI gets really good.
I want to pick up a bit on that. I've been the Luddite, right? I've been dragging my heels on this and doubting it. And I've been concerned, we've been
I was concerned at first. I'm finding when we use these devices, people are very quickly getting used to these kinds of note takers and things like that. I anticipated more of a creepiness, being listened to kind of thing. But we're really not seeing that, especially leaders' response matters. How this information is being used, how the organization responds, really builds trust very quickly. And the other thing about this is the Plot is a bit of a portable device, of course, but a lot of this about data, you know, the power of putting these agents in your Microsoft 365 environments means it doesn't go out to the web, it's given a knowledge base, but it exists in your system. Your IT folks ought to be okay with that and feel safer with that.
Can the Hop Copilot be used without Plot? For example, enter our human notes into a system and then the system can see patterns over time.
100%. It doesn't care.
Yeah.
Data is data.
Yeah. The Plot is just, it allows us to go out to the field and capture that. But without that, there's still these agents that can run over your whole SMS structure or be desktop agents that you can use on work instruction investigation. And they're safe and secure in their system without Plot.
It'll work with Microsoft Teams.
Yeah.
So if you have a Teams meeting, transcript pops out. It'll do that as well. It doesn't. It's okay, because that's just all the Microsoft environment.
Will you be offering a commercial version? And if so, what will the cost be and when will it be available?
So they're available now. And okay, I'll tell you, the agents are about $1,500 each per Microsoft instance. So how many Microsoft servers you got? Okay, they're not priced on number of users. They are priced on your Microsoft instance. Sound good? That's it. Okay, the reason why we price it like that is we don't want to create barriers. Okay, this is to help you on your learning journey in that space. Very Canadian question. Well, once again, Jeff is based here in
Vancouver. Yeah, FOIP is the Freedom of Information and Privacy Act. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So once again, that's all your Microsoft environment, okay? Because our agents are simply working in your internal environment.
This doesn't exist in our office. It exists in yours.
Yeah.
You did mention that presentation and video are going to be available. Where do we find it, Brent?
Yep. Well, if you register using the QR code, we'll send it out to you.
Okay.
Because there's no trade secrets.
How does Plot work in loud work environments with machinery and heavy equipment constantly?
How does any microphone work in a loud, noisy environment?
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
You've answered the other question. What about AI hallucinations? We were asked this question with Klaus yesterday as well. With it being mass market and Hop Copilot being free, or the base one free, how does the system handle confidential information and avoid AI hallucinations?
Yeah, so the first thing is, if humans can hallucinate, AI will always have the potential to hallucinate. Okay, because the potential was always going to be there. We've just trained it, and meaning that just as humans want to be helpful, okay, and sometimes humans make little stories up to be helpful, then we've told AI that you need to ask the person a better question. Sound good? So we're applying Hop, ask a better question, or be more curious.
I want to pick up on another Sean point because I'm such a big fan, right? Yesterday, he talked about putting down tools that are no longer working for you. And I think the actual tools. These virtual tools, I don't know that it's about putting them down, but it's definitely about coaching them and teaching them. I'd also like to say, anybody who's played around in ChatGPT, those web-based general ChatGPT type functions, you've got to tell them when you suspect they're wrong. You've even got to tell them when you suspect they're telling you what you want to hear, you know, and ask them to be objective. And those are coaching challenges we have with GPT tools that are out there. But again, these are specific agents within your system based on a set of knowledge we've given it and a set of instructions we've given it. So that amount of hallucination or that what people are experiencing with GPT generally really doesn't happen in these 365 agents because they're secure.
And just be curious, ask it. Like I've said to you, this is an emerging trend. Just say, show me where you've identified that. It will show you. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we provide these agents to people, we give you a whole lot of training documents. So for instance, the investigations one will give you a document that has 100 statements. Half counterfactuals, half aren't. Your job is to put it up and to ask it, how many counterfactuals in this document? And if the answer isn't 50, then you ask it, please dig deeper. Okay? Because that's what it wants to know. Okay? Because that's the whole part of that training process. Think of it, you're nurturing. Not a baby, it's more like a fiery adolescent.
This okay. is some, but you're nurturing it. Something else I learned as the non-technical guy. Whereas these GPTs are centralized, and so all users are feeding into one central kind of brain, these co-pilot agents are not. So two organizations out there, each organization takes on board the same agent. Those are unique in your system and secure in your system. So they will grow and evolve differently between organizations based on how you use it and how you coach it. So it starts the same with that same body of knowledge, but through your use and through, you know, using these tools based on those Hop AI principles, you're going to see difference in performance between organizations. I find that quite fascinating in how it really supports an organization to learn and grow within itself.
So if you've ever heard of something called a mic drop moment, that's what just happened on that stage when you guys just walked off and laid out the lay to the land of everything that you're doing.
Wow.
I mean, that's how it came across. With Copilot, the price point, the data points that you already have, was this the plan originally? I mean, was this what you were thinking when you said, hey, we're going to build out learning teams and you started developing the whole program? Was this what you were, was this the plan in the long run, or did this kind of change as you were going?
I think it always changes. I don't think there's any real master plan. All we know is that this space is so rapidly evolving that our whole strategy was not about how much product we can sell, but how do we remove any barriers of entry for organizations to try something? And then more importantly, how do we get them to create their own sustainable journey with AI? That was always the intention. And that, I think, is consistent with our own principles of how we've always published content. You know, we've managed that content. We've published it for the community to grow.
So, Jeff, let me ask you, how did you get involved with this? I know that you said in particular, you're not a tech guy. So how did you, when you first heard of this, what did you think? Because, you know, AI at first, everybody was kind of a little bit hesitant. You referenced that during the presentation. So what was the moment that you said, okay, this is a good idea?
I was super hesitant, and I was happy to lean into our kind of jokingly called, you know, leaning on actual intelligence 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It was about a year ago. Again, working with Brent, he started teaching me and showing me, and I was still hesitant. I'm not technical. But came on the journey, and it just fascinating. If an old heel dragon Luddite like me can go on this journey in the last year and have my concerns answered or overcome, and you know, talking about a master plan, we couldn't. It's changing so fast, exponentially, and we couldn't have anticipated this a couple of years ago. So, you know, the power of partnership and the power of Brent's experiences, we're just constantly surveying and monitoring and updating and meeting the market where it's at.
But I mean, just in regards of the openness and the willingness of you guys giving away essentially what we'll call it a product, but I don't even know if we can call it a product on what it is, and because it's just really just part of the learning organization is really what it boils down to. So as you decided to say, hey, we're not going to charge per se, we're going to give it away for free. What was the idea behind that? Whoever wants to answer it, of course.
I'd say it's like samples of a honey ham at Costco that you need to give. The hesitancy is out there. It's real. And I think making some versions available for people to experiment with and troubleshoot and just get comfortable with, it may or may not be for them. But I think many folks will go on a similar journey, even if they're as hesitant as I was. They'll go on a journey with the samples, the free samples, and I think they'll get very comfortable taking the more bespoke agents, the more built-out agents. And the price point on those, I think, is just, again, it's moving so fast. Our goal in this has always been, this is another aspect of the Hop journey and really trying to get organizations to learn and improve. It's not about cornering a market or building a product. We are folks that have been dedicated to helping organizations on the Hop journey. And this is just such an accelerant to that it need not be you know, over the moon expensive. It's just really putting it in the hands where it needs to be.
Well, I mean, I look at this and it almost optimizes the end user experience, because you're taking data, you're taking other data points. And I mean, and I know it's inside of their own individual Microsoft server, but you're looking at it and there's so much information. And then you almost tripling in size from 1 year to the next. And the willingness of people sharing data points, you have to have something that's there that people are really able to garner information and go, hey, this is really changing the way that work is going. So what are you hearing back? What information are you getting that people are saying, this is really, you know, resonating with our organization?
I think it really varies whether it's at the operational level or at that leadership level. So if I look at it from an operations perspective, they are learning more about how to support work than they've ever done before. And that's a key driver for them. Because at that front line, they really want to support people for work to go well. Now, at a leadership level, once again, creating that curiosity, you're always going to encounter that starting point of how do we start to measure this? Okay. And rather than saying measurement is wrong, what we're trying to do is we're trying to give them an evaluative measurement approach using narrative. That, because if we take them below a number or take them below a statement and they can see what sits below it, they become more curious. So, and a lot of the work that we've been doing is we're not taking numbers away from people. We're not taking those things. We're giving them additional content that is narrative rich. So the example, you know, we got asked a lot about misinformation and hallucination. Okay. I would say to you, Jay, if you are capturing raw narrative from people, AI is less likely to hallucinate and give misinformation because it's getting the real stuff, versus most reporting, by the time it gets to the top, is so heavily filtered, it no longer makes sense. So we believe this is the first time that leaders can actually hear the reality of work, not that filtered version as it goes through each layer of management.
To your point on metrics, you know, the numbers have killed curiosity. And I think that if this is a shoehorn, a lever, the thin edge of the wedge to opening up that governance curiosity of the stories behind the numbers, I think that would just be wonderful.
And then I have to ask about a piece of technology that you spoke about while you both were on the stage called Plot. I had not heard about it until a few days ago. When did the idea come about of integrating this into the system?
Look, it was more not so much about the product itself, but we're basically saying that there are huge digital literacy issues in the workforce.
Well, do you look at it too from the standpoint where the person that is capturing it, information-wise, the person that's capturing, not the device, as I'm typing it, I might have a level of bias of what I'm putting in?
Oh, you have to have bias. Look, you have to. I mean, humans will judge information as they receive it. But for us, it was actually about how can we be in the field, capture effective and efficient information, and make sense of it quickly. So one of the examples I had, we were dealing with an organization where they were having a series of high potential nemesis, you know, things that were worrying the organization. And there was always a delay in time between when the event happened and what the learning was. And what we were finding is that leaders, purely by nature, were having to fill the void before the learnings came out. And that void was being filled by, you know, who failed and why they failed. So part of that process was that we gave some of their safety teams this Plaud device and asked them to simply go out and run a 4Ds after the event. And those safety people were then able to present back to the leadership within minutes of the conversation a whole lot of rich context. And that context was biased because it was system-focused, not person-focused. But what that did is it created the legs for the second story. So once the learning really happened and they dug deeper into it, those two things connected. And that's it. And, you know, from their point of view, for the cost of a device, it was $200, their time, the whole value proposition dramatically changed.
I mean, because I just look at it from the standpoint as you're capturing real data in real time as it's coming through, as the people are, of course, presenting it. Now, how many of these have you tested, that you've tested personally or between the both of you, have you seen in real time as you're doing it? Just a ballpark figure. It doesn't have to be exact, of course.
Hundreds, thousands? I mean, we get thousands of 4D conversations. I mean, we have clients sharing with us outputs of 4D conversations. Shout out to Josh, by the way, but Josh allowed me to share a recent 4Ds conversation I can share with. A 4Ds came in and they used this type of lead pencil to do some sort of marking on some piece of equipment. And if they use a pencil sharpener, it actually affects the lead, breaks the lead, because the design of the lead has got clay and something else in it. So the guys are having to use a Stanley knife to sharpen it, but knives are banned on these sites. And if you're seen with a knife, you are physically removed from the site.
Okay.
But these workers are having to create these workarounds. So they said it was dumb, okay, that they can't sharpen these pencils. Okay. But what was really amazing was that the group came up with a solution. Someone went out and brought a potato peeler. Someone brought a $1.20 potato peeler, which has a guard.
Works beautiful.
Okay. Isn't a blade, isn't a knife. Okay. And that was a solution. But they wanted to share that because the workers believe that other people would have been facing the same situation. So here we have a $1.20 device, a worker's future. You could not, there is no causal reasoning, there's no RCA, there's nothing that could ever have made that connection between a potato peeler and a worker's job.
That's genius. So, because I know that you guys are already giving great information, if people want to find out about Copilot, how can they get it? If they're at home taking a listen to this, how can they get it? Is it just an app? Is it a download? How does it come about?
Yeah, so basically the website is hopcopilot.com. You can register, and there are a couple of free apps. We've got two Microsoft 365 Copilot apps that they can use. And when they register, that'll be sent to them, and also a little video will go with it as well, because, once again, you've got to overcome IT for that environment. We've also provided the same apps in OpenAI if people want to try it, and that product will work on a free version of OpenAI. The Plaud app, buy your Plaud, get our website, download it. Jeff was our test mule.
If Jeff can do it, anybody can do it.
And what we'd love is share your stories with us. Tell us how it went.
Well, I have a question about stories in particular. During the presentation, Jeff showed the video of Taylor and Michael. How did this come about? And Energy Safety Canada looked like they were the producers of it. But how did it come about? How was it determined that these two individuals, who are great guys, needed to be the test subjects?
Came about right here. We were here a couple of years ago.
Because they did a great presentation last year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they... Was it last year or the year
yeah,
before?
It was last year. I didn't get to see the one this year, so I'm not saying the one this year is bad. Just so you're sure that I'm glad.
I think they had actually heard about it the year previously.
Okay.
And by last year, they came in and told their story. And it was such a compelling story, such an excellent example, that at the end of this conference, we had meetings at this conference last year about producing that video because we really wanted to seize upon that story. And again, kudos to those guys. They've taken it so much further now this year. And they're telling a story from their perspective of the tips and traps, advice for other leaders in their shoes to have these conversations. They are fairly straightforward. There's a bit of a nuance to it, and these folks are experiencing it. Michael and Taylor are experiencing this every day. So I really love where they're going with it. They're now, this year, sharing, you know, the best ways to have these conversations and sharing that with others in their industry. It's kudos to them and to Energy Safety Canada.
Okay. So if people want to find out more information on what you guys have going on, where can they go?
Website, Hot Pilot. Yep. Yep, HOP. pilot.com, copilot.com, sorry. Once again, you would have seen that we presented our version of AI-based principles for AI.
Oh, I loved it.
Leveraging off Hop. Don't you also notice our opening slide? That entire image was generated by AI.
Very nice.
As well. So we are in a constant state of learning. Many of the things that we've been doing is because organizations are asking us to support them on that journey. So a lot of our, you know, we don't come up with these crazy ideas. These are sparked by organizations who really want to learn more. And, you know, my view is not all organizations necessarily want to share their story, but we see our platform as that platform being able to do that.
Well, Jeff and Brent, I appreciate you both coming on.
The views and opinions expressed during this broadcast, podcast, or radio show are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Safety FM and or Radio Big. The content discussed, including examples of analysis, is provided for illustrative purposes only. It should not be applied as the sole solution in real-world scenarios, as it is based on limited and dated open source information. Any assumptions made during this broadcast, podcast, or radio show are not reflective of Safety FM and or Radio Big. No portion of this broadcast, podcast, or radio show may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic, mechanical, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of Safety FM and or Radio Big. For permission requests, please contact Safety FM or Radio Big directly.